It's really important not to start thinking that AI is going to be replacing teachers or replacing people, because an AI cannot give you, I suppose, like the emotional support that students need and the care that they need. And, you know, we all have stories in our lives of teachers who have gone above and beyond and who have really affected us and changed the way that we think.
This is Inspiring Design, where unique innovators come together to share their knowledge, share their insight, and keep us up to date with the latest industry trends. And here's your host, Rushan Senanayake.
Welcome everyone to a brand new season, and we continue to inspire. But this time, season 5 focuses on emerging technologies, and we hit the ground running with one of the hottest topics these days, generative AI in education. So sitting here with me is Natalie Ostego from University of Southern Queensland. Natalie is currently the Associate Director of Student Success at UniSQ, where she leads the implementation of strategies to support the diverse learning needs of domestic and international students. Natalie is also an innovative thinker and a strategic one, with over 20 years of experience in tertiary and vocational education and training. And now she sets her focus on Gen AI as well. Her career highlights include presenting at various conferences, receiving the Australian Award for University Teaching, and becoming an IEAA Associate Fellow and making lasting connections constantly with her students. So without further ado, let's get straight into it. All right, so thank you so much for being here, Natalie, and welcome to Inspiring Design. Can we start off with, as usual, a little bit of your background? What's your story?
Thanks. It's lovely to be here and spend time with you. So my name's Natalie. I'm the Associate Director of Student Success Advising at the University of Southern Queensland. So I've worked with both international and domestic students now in the field of education for probably around 20 years.
Wow.
Yeah, and you know, it all started when I decided I wanted to travel, and I was thinking about how I could do that and financially support myself at the same time.
Yeah.
And I decided to do that by teaching English overseas. And I went to China for 2 years and did that, and realized that I really loved teaching adults.
Yeah.
So when I came back to Australia, I got myself fully qualified, and I started doing just that. So, and I mean, that's, I think, where you and I originally met.
Right.
Yeah, when we were both working, I think, for International Education Services.
That's right, yeah.
Doing a foundation year for international students, which was just a lovely experience. But I've always kind of flitted between, I guess, working with international students and working with domestic students in a tertiary space. But I've also worked, for example, in the vocational education sector as well.
Yeah. So pretty diverse set. And I think that's the reason I also wanted to get your opinion on this, the hot topic almost. And so let's get straight into it. It's one of those things that I think there's a lot of noise around AI, and especially Gen AI in education. What does this look like? It's forcing a lot of change everywhere. Like, this is not a local issue in Australia. It's absolutely global. So in your opinion, what is Gen AI for people who've never heard it before?
I think we really need to look at it as a tool. It's a tool that we can learn to use, and that we can use for a whole range of different things. And I like to think of it as like a type of technology that performs a whole lot of tasks. And a lot of those tasks are things that humans can do. So things like problem solving, learning, reasoning, you know, examples that I think about are things like speech recognition technology, translation tech software, but also like some of those really exciting future technologies as well, like self-driving cars, which I cannot wait for because I hate driving. you know, A really popular, I guess, example are those AI language models that we see. Things like, and we've heard a lot of them in the news, things like chatbots that are really there to simulate, I guess, a kind of a conversation with the AI. And they're designed to process and analyze large amounts of data. And then the chatbot uses those data to generate responses for the users. So it gets this huge amount of text that it then uses to respond to prompts and questions that the user gives to it. So it's just like a really interactive technology, which I kind of really like. And, you know, I've played around with it quite a bit. You know, I've used it to like generate articles, website text, jokes, poetry. Like it can be quite fun.
Correct.
I think it can be quite fun.
I actually recently, this is I think last night or the day before, saw one of the elements of how translation on a video. So someone can be talking in English, but it'll translate in their voice, in their audio, in their pitch tone and everything like that, but in Spanish or Portuguese or different languages just with a click of a button. That was just a game changer, I feel. And it almost moves the lips according to as well. So I can see that being a very scary thing almost, but also a very useful thing as well. So, and this has changed so rapidly just in the last year or so. So this is where I think we're trying to figure this out. What's your thought process on how this is going to shape the future and why do you think that might be?
Well, I think the future is now in terms of Gen AI. It's not going away.
Yeah.
So in a lot of ways, we have to embrace it for what it is. And I think we have to start thinking about the different ways in which industry will start to harness this tool.
Yeah.
I think it will probably end up getting rid of a whole lot of low-level kind of jobs. But I think we've known for a long time that that's coming.
Do you think it'll actually get rid of it, or do you think it'll change the model of it?
I think you're right to qualify that. It's more likely that it's going to change the model because tasks that we might normally have given to someone to do will probably run through the AI, but we will still need our expert knowledge and our ability to think critically and to apply that to be able to use the technology well.
Correct.
And just like anything, like the jobs will then like transform. And we'll start to go, okay, well, what can we use AI for? What do we really need a person for?
No, fair enough. And I think this is where the biggest problem that, you know, we've almost as a human race have been used to a certain model, the way we learn, the way we teach, the way we've been operating. And it's been a relatively slow evolution. And AI has kind of thrown that desk upside down and then we're trying to figure things out. What are your thought process on how this is going to affect education? Because the main problem is we almost have to now prepare students to a future that we don't know, you know, whereas 30, 40, 20, even 10 years ago, we could say these are the very real career pathways. These are the skill sets. But how do we do that now? And how is it starting to affect the education system?
Yeah, I think we have to be really responsive to the ways in which AI is being used in industry now and potentially in the future as well. I think what that means for us is that we're going to have to do a lot of work with our students on critical thinking skills. We're going to have to really work with them on, I think, their synthesis of evidence. Getting them to demonstrate their critical thinking and to show creativity as well. And they're going to need this to stay ahead of the AI because the AI can now do those basic tasks for us. And, you know, there were, I remember reading something about when the calculator first came out and how they were like, oh, we won't need mathematicians anymore. The calculator will do it all. You know, that's not the truth at all. So it just means that our future workforce will need to be skilled, I think, in different ways. And we can already, I think, see this coming through in how we're using AI in education to educate our students as well. You know, I recently wrote an article for SBS Learn English on how users can use a chatbot to learn English. And that's because, you know, AI, it's constantly patient, It's available 24/7. It's interactive and it's personalized as well.
Mm.
And, you know, we can see that on a wider scale with something like Khan Academy's AI Tutor.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're making claims that it can detect students' mistakes, it can identify misconceptions in their understanding, and it can provide feedback as well.
Mm.
And these, of course, are all things that we would expect educators to do.
Yeah. But they can't be there 24/7.
No, they can't be there 24/7. And also there are a lot of areas in the world where you won't be able to find teachers to be able to teach certain subjects or content areas.
Mm.
However, it's really important not to start thinking that AI is going to be replacing teachers or replacing people because an AI cannot give you, I suppose, like the emotional support that students need and the care that they need. And, you know, we all have stories in our lives of teachers who have gone above and beyond and who have really affected us and changed the way that we think or 100%. Learn. I read an interesting article recently around, you know, I guess the risks of dehumanizing people through the language that we use. So, you know, we talk about things like partnering with AI, for example.
Yeah.
But, you know, AI is not a person. It's never going to be a person in the way that we might think of it in science fiction or whatever. So, you know, if you get a chance, read this article by Professor Kelly Matthews on the dangers of anthropomorphizing AI, because it's really very interesting. And, you know, it's all about, I think, us kind of accepting AI for the tool that it is, but also knowing that it's not replacing us as people or our ability to feel emotions and to be creative and innovative and think critically and all those kinds of things.
It's I read this book recently as well. This was about a year ago, a year and a half ago, when AI was just kind of hitting the market. And I think the book is called 2042. And it's got its own section on education, which is the part that really threw me into this realm. And one of the elements was this idea of maybe the teacher in the classroom gets almost 3D scanned and a digital twin of him or her is part of the AI integrated version. So then obviously the data is then given that feedback back to the teacher. But this whole element, and there's a lot of ethical things, unethical things there, a lot of consent required, a lot of questions to be answered, policies to change. So we're not anywhere near it, but that concept does seem pretty cool, because then that whole concept of the educator being connected to the students on demand 24/7, but also having that almost a different kind of blended learning that we know coming through. So I think it's exciting time, but the negative connotations is there as well. And we're starting to see that constantly, even in the classrooms, with how do you actually control students' academic integrity? Like, what is that starting to look like? That's a big, big, big question everyone's asking.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, as I said before, you know, I work for the University of Southern Queensland in the Student Success Advising Team. And one of our things that we do is work with students at the university who have received an allegation of academic misconduct.
Mm.
And certainly since the start of 2023, we've probably seen those numbers triple.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And, yeah, it's huge. And, you know, a large proportion of that is due to students using AI, but also not, I think, a lot of it goes to understanding as well, and understanding what is academic integrity. And, you know, I think, you know, people tend to put like this moral or ethical lens onto academic integrity. But, you know, we need to always ask ourselves, you know, why are these students cheating?
Yeah.
Like, why are they using the tools and the technology in this way? And, you know, I've worked with a lot of students one-on-one around this kind of stuff. And it always comes down to, you know, some main themes there. It's like pressure from parents, pressure from themselves on, you know, succeeding at university, fear that they're going to let people down. I think our students today, you know, they have so many demands on their time, so many competing responsibilities. We've seen this recognized in the Australian Universities Accord recently, where they've stated that most students now are working. You know, when I went through uni originally, not many of my friends worked, but today I would say most of the students I speak with work.
Correct.
And some of them work full-time jobs while studying part-time or full-time. And I think then you have those two kind of things going on, but then you've also got this kind of lack of understanding of academic integrity as well, perhaps, and how to reference also. So we've kind of got this whole kind of stuff around life load demands, pressure, fear of failure, and also just needing a bit of, I think, upskilling.
And it makes sense that they're going to take the shortcuts. That's seemingly wonderful. It's quicker. And they don't know, I think, what they don't know. It's that ignorance is part of it, but it's, I don't think, always comes from a negative place.
Exactly right. And, you know, I think this is not something new either. Like AI isn't causing this. It's not like a cause and effect relationship there, you know. I love to always tell people about this silk handkerchief, which sits in the Hong Kong Museum of History.
Right.
And it's from 1860. And once it's unfolded, you can see writing all over it. And it was found tucked into a student's sleeve trying to take exams back in 1860. That's as low tech as you get, right?
Yeah, definitely.
But, you know, it's not the first time that we're encountering this.
Yeah.
And I think it's very much around having some strategies that we can use to really help students with this technology and how to use it appropriately.
Yeah. Before we kind of explore the strategies, one of the questions that came to my mind was if a student is actually using AI tools, so do you think referencing it is a good thing?
Absolutely. Students should always check their institution's policy on the use of AI to find out if the use of AI is allowed or not.
Yeah.
But what we have already seen is that our referencing systems have been quite proactive in this space. And there is already information out there on how to reference AI appropriately.
Yeah.
So we can see that in like the AP7 and Harvard referencing systems.
Correct. Useful. And that takes me on to that next part, is that strategy. So what can schools, universities, or even potentially companies, what can they do about this control? Like how can they engage in it?
Yeah. Well, I would say, you know, everybody always goes to detection. Like, oh, we've got to detect this. We've got to find it out, you know. But, you know, we don't want to get into this, like, detection arms race.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Gen AI came along and these big plagiarism detection tools threw themselves into identifying it. And they do it quite well now.
And it was almost a knee-jerk reaction.
It was, wasn't it? It absolutely was. And now we can kind of see the response to that is that people are now creating chatbots which promise that they are rephrasing tools. They call them rephrasing tools that are undetectable to plagiarism scanners.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's always going to escalate. You're always going to find that. So for me, it's about then going, okay, so how are we responding to this in a really holistic way? And this is where it comes down to a whole of organization academic integrity strategy, whether that be a business or a university or a high school. You know, it's about making sure that there's a really clear policy around academic misconduct and academic integrity, making sure that we're taking a really educative approach as well, because I think that's important. It's about learning and upskilling people. I think robust assessment design is absolutely at the heart of it. And right down the end of all of that is having a good, you know, academic integrity detection tool.
Correct.
Yeah. So for me, it's really about creating a framework that puts our students in the center of the learning community as like a responsible learner. A responsible learner within an Australian university community as well, and then reinforcing that across the student life cycle.
Yeah.
And, you know, that starts right from the beginning by having a clear policy in the handbook. You know, you might want to have like an induction video for the students.
Yeah.
And then you just build on that all the way through. Like, a lot of institutions will say, well, we have an academic integrity module. Our work here is done. And don't get me wrong, academic integrity modules are great. And I fully support them. But we need to be really careful as well, because often those modules are quite generalized.
Correct.
And I think what we know from experience as educators is that students often struggle with generalized information and then applying it to specific situations.
Yeah.
So I would say always, you know, talk about what ethical decision making looks like in terms of specific case studies related to the types of content that you're teaching. So if you're teaching STEM, talk about like the dangers of falsifying data and experiments.
Correct.
You know,
yeah.
If you're teaching design, talk about what it means, you know, when you're discussing design ideas and not plagiarizing other people's
Correct.
Design ideas
yeah.
and what that looks like. Like, make it really specific for your students. And, you know, I think this will start to come through more and more, particularly in policy.
Yeah.
You know, what we're seeing now, for example, is TEXA has said they're issuing a request for information around action plans that demonstrate an institutional strategy to mitigate the risks of Gen AI.
Yeah.
We can also see, for example, for RTOs in the vocational education sector, that their draft revised standards have already come out, and there have been changes to wording around authenticity and validity. So we can kind of see that now these big kind of governing bodies are recognizing that this is an issue.
Yeah.
So I'm always like, let's be on the front foot of this. Mm. Let's not be the ones responding. Let's be the ones who are ahead of the field, who are paving the way.
Correct, correct. And this is a little bit of a controversial question, but looking at the schools and universities as an organization, if the leadership isn't very open to the use of AI as a future skill set, do you have any messages for them?
That's pretty loaded.
little bit. The main reason I ask is, you know, if we're looking at it as a tool towards a future, it's a technology that I think people should be harnessing for their future. I come from the same perspective. I don't think it's going to go away, but we need to find out how to use it because it's the new knife. Like, a knife could be used in a really beautiful way for amazing things versus some very horrible things. Mm. I've met plenty of leaders in the education sector that have both the connotations and the different mindsets. Are there any thoughts? And you can feel free to say no. I just thought I'd throw it out there.
That's okay. No, I know what you mean. Like, I think you've probably gleaned already from what I've been saying that I'm of a mind to embrace it.
Yeah.
Because I don't think it's going away.
Mm.
And there's no point hiding from it. You know, I talk to people who I know in industry and friends who are working in the space. They're already using it.
Yeah.
You know, Correct. I think if we as educators, I think really at the heart of what we do is around preparing our students for lifelong learning and for lifelong success in life and in the workplace as well.
Yeah.
So I always see my role as equipping students for future success. Mm. And I don't think we're doing that if we're not teaching them how to use AI appropriately.
Correct. Correct. That's, I think, a good response. And continuing back on that previous thought process of what your ideas of tailoring and the generalized content is good, but then there is that subject level application that needs to happen. What can educators do? What are some strategies that they could potentially harness? And does the responsibility lie with them, or is it the university or the school?
I think it's absolutely a combined responsibility. It's the organization, it's the educator, and it's the student as well. Let's not forget them. It's all of us in it together.
Correct.
But if we're talking particularly about educators, I think you know, robust assessment design is really where it's at for me.
Mm-hmm.
It's really taking a look at how we are assessing students and making sure that we're doing that in a way that is either preventing academic misconduct or embracing AI.
Yeah. And for the layman who doesn't know what robust assessment design is?
Let's talk about it.
There's always listeners from outside the education sphere that listen in, so I just want to make sure that they're not lost.
Oh, absolutely. So let's say we give a student like an essay topic, for example, like let's write about globalization. Well, that to me is not a very robust assessment because, you know, you could just type into, like, for example, ChatGPT, write me an essay about globalization, and it'll do it in a minute.
Yeah,
but so what we want to do is we want to focus on assessment that only humans can do.
Yeah.
So that's really using, I think, Bloom's taxonomy of higher order thinking skills.
Absolutely.
And that's stuff like innovation and creativity. It's problem solving, critical thinking, and the ability to make judgments.
Yeah.
So if we combine that then with a response where we're requiring students to give a personalized answer, do something where they're reflecting on their learning and really linking it into the individual, that's when our assessment design starts to become more robust.
Yeah.
So instead of like, write me an essay about globalization, we could say, write me an essay about globalization in Australia that takes into account First Nations views and compare this to your own personalized response to globalization in fashion design, for example. And that's personalized. They're having to make a judgment call. They're having to think critically. It's narrowed the topic right down. And then what we can do to add into it to make it even more robust is do things like ask the student to submit their plan for their assessment item. Get them to submit their draft.
Yeah.
Make it part of the grades that they're getting for that assessment item.
Almost the thinking process. It's something we commonly do in design, but it's harder to do in things like essays because it's not normally done.
That's right. And it is time consuming, to be fair, to let's say a university lecturer who might have 200 students. Like, that's a pretty time consuming thing to do. But there are ways to do it. Like, you could even give your students an open question that they have to put together themselves and design themselves based on criteria, and then you have to sign it off, and then they can go away and do the research on that. So I think it's really also about building into the assessment ways for the students to discuss it also, and maybe even defend their work orally. And we see that being done quite well, I think, often in vocational education, because they've really embraced oral assessment as well. So
do you find that exams would come around again? Because that's also a common practice that educators are starting to look at, because there's no way of knowing that the student's going to do this work and know the knowledge and the content then and there. And exams kind of did that. And there's rumors on, you know, a lot of, what's the word, like hearsay almost, that that exams are going to come back and make a return. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, it always goes back to me as to, like, what are you trying to assess? What are you trying to test? You know, if you just want to assess rote learning, then fine, an exam's great.
Yeah.
But what's the point of that when you could just Google the answer?
Correct.
So I'm always with an exam. If you can just Google the answer, what's the point of asking the question?
Yeah.
And
because it's not really testing their ability. It's not really
testing anything, is it? Like, it's not testing, like, the student's ability to perform, or the student's experience, or the student's ability to think through a problem.
Correct.
So for me, exams are not where it's at. I've certainly heard people saying, oh, let's just go and get them all in a room again.
Yeah.
And, you know. But there are lots of really good reasons why we came away from using that as an assessment model.
Yeah.
And it was because all it was doing was promoting the memorization of key facts and figures. And we don't want to go back to that. That's not going to be useful for the world of work in which we are coming towards either.
Absolutely.
Like, it's actually not going to be helpful skill development for our students. And, you know, that takes me to the idea of, well, let's start building AI into our assessment as well. Because that, for me, is where it's at. So we're using this as AI in the world of work already. Let's start building it in really realistic ways
into
how we would use it into our assessment. And I think there are three kind of ways we can do that right now. One of them is around setting a question where the students actually have to frame the questions they would ask the chatbot. And then, because we know from having used it that the quality of the question, like how well you have put that question together and formulated it, will determine the quality of the response that you get from the chatbot. So an example I came across of this is where engineering students were asked to use ChatGPT And then they composed a bunch of questions in an email, and that was part of the overall assignment. So then they had to then submit that email with all those questions in it as part of the assessment.
Yeah.
Because that's how it's being used in the engineering industry right now.
Correct. Yeah.
If we think about it. The other way I think we've been seeing Gen AI used really successfully in assessment is around asking students to generate a response using the chatbot and then getting them to use their professional judgment to critically assess the response that it's given.
Yeah.
I really love this because I was talking to a friend of mine the other day who is a nurse, and he was saying, look, Matt, I've already started using Gen AI. Like, you know, I put in information and it spills out a care plan for me. I go in and I use my expert knowledge and I make changes to that. But he's like, that's just saved me a whole bunch of time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Now, I mean, he can't do that if he doesn't have the knowledge to be able to do that and the ability to critically assess that information and then make changes to it based on the individual person in front of him.
Correct.
So that's the kind of stuff I think we need to be teaching our students and then assessing them on. And then I think the third thing we can do is just kind of like you were saying before, go, well, look, let students use AI to answer these questions and then get them to reference it. So we can give our students really specific instructions on how we anticipate they will use AI. I saw a great example from the University of the Sunshine Coast come through on a group work assessment where they were saying at each step of the kind of like this group work process, there were specific instructions on how the students could use AI and then how they could acknowledge it and reference it at each step.
Yeah.
So I think thinking around these things as educators quite creatively and thinking about how are students going to be using it in the workforce and then replicating that in our teaching and in our assessment is really the way to go.
I love that. And I think you covered a broad range. I might add a fourth one because it's something that we do. It's in the practice of design thinking when we're actually focusing on that as a skill set. And, you know, design thinking is another way of saying critical thinking, creative problem solving. So you've kind of already answered that question. But one of the common things is building into the actual assessment whether or not they could use AI for a certain part, but also the manual way of thinking and human interactions and whatnot. And sometimes both are required. Sometimes one might be better than the other. Sometimes it's a comparison, but almost giving that extra opportunity now adds a massive layer to it. And students then almost get a choice what pathway they want to forge, but then naturally starting to then think critically just to make that choice, right? So it's a common practice that's being done from a more design thinking's perspective, but brilliant.
I like that because then the student can kind of think through, well, what's actually going to work better with this specific problem?
Correct, correct.
And I think that's really helping them to critically reflect on their practice as well, which is really helpful.
Absolutely, and it can change based on where they're at in the approach. If they're in a research phase, maybe AI might be better and quicker. But if they're actually at an ideation phase where there's more contextualized information, might need a combination. One of the main things going from here is, and we've talked about the fact that students should be at the center of it, and that's 100% valid when you're looking at the future as well. They're the human capital. What are your advice for them in terms of using Gen AI, but more specifically using Gen AI ethically?
Absolutely. I think this is really going back to the critical thinking component and recognizing that it's a complementary skill when using Gen AI. You know, we talked before about how Gen AI is based on this large amount of text data that has been taken from the internet and uploaded to the tool, right? So, you know, as we know, not everything on the internet is accurate. So if you're going to use Gen AI, you have to make sure that what you're actually talking about is accurate and check that. Like, I think put your expert knowledge lens on top of that. And we can see already cases in the news where this has been a big issue.
Correct.
You know, there was that submission to a parliamentary inquiry that falsely reported that four major financial firms had defrauded customers and falsified records. Like, that is not a mistake you want to be using. So check your facts. Check always. Use your critical judgment and double check everything. Also remembering too that the internet is biased. There is a lot of biased information on there. And you have to ask yourself, you know, what bias is the AI giving you as well when it's answering a question? Like, you know, when we look at, you know, power theory, for example, who's being left out of the answer that the Gen AI is giving you?
That was actually one of the main things I saw in a recent interview with even the bigger minds like Bill Gates, for example. One of the problems they're trying to solve is being able to use Gen AI, but from a medical perspective, just because of their doctor to patient ratio is really high. So Gen AI has the potential of solving something like that, but the issues, the diseases, the illnesses that happen in Africa are very different to what AI is actually spitting it out for. At the moment, if you self-diagnose through AI, it's going to give you a common cold, but very much not the case when it comes to an African context, especially regional. So being able to apply that level of information, the removing the biases, I think that's valuable advice.
Yeah, and what a good point. Like, I haven't read that. I'll have to go and look that up.
It's on YouTube, actually.
It's on YouTube, yes. Okay. Because that's exactly where it's at. You know, we need to be asking ourselves, like, which groups of people have been left out of what the AI is talking to us about.
Correct.
And I think, I guess the next, the final piece of advice I would give to our students is also to be safe and think about your digital privacy and security. Like, a lot of the Gen AI now is in apps. And, you know, we need to be careful when we download any app to think about how it's used, how that information is being shared with other companies, and how it's being protected from hackers as well.
Oh, look, I think what this topic, we could talk for hours and hours, and I don't think we'll actually stop. But in the interest of time as well, you've shared so much knowledge. So we'll, all those bits and pieces, we'll put it into the show notes as well. But if anyone wants to learn more about this, do you have any resources, and what's the best way to kind of get in touch with you?
I would say, please look me up on LinkedIn. I'm pretty active on there. I love sharing things and talking about AI and some of the other work that I'm doing. And, you know, I think I couldn't even point someone to a specific resource because everything is changing so quickly.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's so fast. True. Like, you know, I was just reading something last night about AI, the open AI store, where people can go in and then they can create their own apps out of that.
Yeah.
And they were talking about like these deep fake apps where, you know, it's impersonating famous people like Elon Musk. And I remember thinking to myself, oh, I hope somebody does that for Shakespeare and uploads his entire works, and then I could have a conversation with Shakespeare. Because how amazing would that be?
Absolutely.
So I just, I can't wait to see what happens next. I think it's an exciting time to be living.
Perfect. Now, look, thank you so much. And on to that, one of the main things before we leave is always understand the tool's terms of use, right? Absolutely. We kind of tend to listen to the noise of the world, but we kind of need to look behind the scenes and learn how to do that more and more as well, rather than just click I agree and then going on to things. Thank you so much. I do usually try to end each episode with a random question. And this is always to kind of put things on the spot, but get the creative juices flowing. And I've been thinking this one, we might not make it techie, but if you could make one worldwide rule for education, what would that be?
Wow.
With great power comes great responsibility.
I think for me, it would be for us to always remember that it is not the student's responsibility to be flexible to the institution. The institution needs to be flexible for the student.
Yeah.
And we should always be putting the student at the center of everything that we do.
Love it. Love it. I can see how that's coming from your expertise and what you do. So brilliant. Natalie, thank you so much for your time. It's been awesome.
Great questions.
Perfect. Bigger and on to better things. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
That's it for today's episode. Now it's time to take action and build on the learnings to get inspired. First up, jump onto rashansenanayake.com/podcast and check out the show notes, links, and other relevant learning materials from this amazing episode. Next, if you learned something new today, click that subscribe button and set yourself up to receive live notifications on future episodes, as well as more opportunities to learn from our amazing guests, brands, and speakers. Last but not least, it's time to have your say. Join the conversation and share your thoughts and feedback on today's episode with a review, all while joining many others with a 5-star rating for Inspiring Design with Rashan Senanayake. Till next time.